should the search for a sustainable alternative to plastic be over? An international team of scientists finally solving the puzzle of how to break down wood into its basic building blocks. The researchers used advanced 3D bioengineering to alter the shape of an enzyme that's active on lignin, one of nature's toughest polymers and a core component of wood. The work means chemicals like nylon, plastics and even carbon fiber can now be made from a waste product.
Japan wants to fight money laundering by using virtual cash. Tokyo is leading a global push to set up an international network for cryptocurrency. It would be something similar to the SWIFT network, which is used by banks to move money around the globe. According to the source, a plan for the network was approved in June, though the government has refused to comment.
Why are we leaving the EU?
Well, because you can do a great trade deal with the EU, but you can also do a great trade deal with the US and others. Now, the funny thing is the EU 10 years ago represented substantially over half our export market. It's now substantially under half, and it's
still our most important market.
It is, but don't forget that they have a £65 billion surplus with us in goods alone. They have a massive incentive to get a great free trade deal done with the UK, and that's what we're going to do.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's July the 19th, and it's 5:11 in the morning. Thank you again for tuning in for The Opening Bell. Another business day here getting underway. We've got lots of ground to cover this morning. There's news about Boeing, news about an interest rate cut. We've got the markets, of course, as well. Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management, one of our regular Friday guests, will be with us to sort of go through some of it this morning. Paul will join us in our first segment this morning. Paul's an SVP and portfolio manager over at Kingsview Asset Management. And we'll bring him into our conversation after we check some headlines this morning. A little bit later in the program, Brian Summers is back from his summer vacation. We're going to talk a little aviation news. There is a little bit of rumbling, however you want to describe it, that Boeing may be about to change the name of the 737 MAX. And we'll bring in Brian at about 5:38 this morning. Of course, we'll also keep you posted on the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic as we move forward in the 5 o'clock hour this morning. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The trading week is winding down after stocks closed slightly higher yesterday. Investors were digesting some corporate earnings. Stocks were buoyed late in the day after comments from a top Federal Reserve official raised hopes of an interest rate cut later this month, maybe a larger rate cut than was initially thought about. At the closing bell yesterday, the Dow was up just 3 points, though. The S&P was up 11 points. The NASDAQ was up about 22 points. This morning, futures are pointing toward opening gains, up nearly a quarter of a percent on the Dow. Dow futures up 68 points. NASDAQ futures up nearly a third this morning, up 22 points. S&P futures are up about 4 points, just fractionally higher this morning. Around the globe, markets are generally higher in Europe, in London, Germany, and France, up by nearly a quarter of a percent to a third. And in Asia, the market day ending the day in positive territory. The Nikkei gaining nearly 420 points, up 2%. In Hong Kong, up nearly a percent. The Hang Seng was up 303 points. The Shanghai up nearly three quarters of a percent at up 23 points. And as we look at oil this morning at $56.06 a barrel in the U.S., which is up about 76 cents. Gold and silver are higher. Gold up by nearly $13 an ounce. Let's begin this morning with a couple of headlines. First, regarding Boeing, Chicago-based Boeing, there is a report that Boeing is going to take a sizable charge, nearly $5 billion hit this quarter because of the 737 MAX crisis. The company said yesterday it will record a $4.9 billion after-tax charge in the second quarter in connection with an estimate of potential concessions and other considerations to customers for disruptions related to the 737 MAX grounding and associated delivery delays. That charge will amount to about $8.47 a share. This morning, Boeing shares are up in after hours, trading nearly 2%, $3.69 a share after falling about 2 points yesterday. Oil prices are jumping, too, after the news that the U.S. Navy downed an Iranian drone over the Persian Gulf. International benchmark crude is up more than 2%. West Texas Intermediate crude up nearly 2%. The Navy drone destroyed yesterday in the Strait of Hormuz. That's a major choke point for oil shipped from the Gulf, and the latest round of confrontation between the U.S. and Iran raising tensions in the Middle East. The company Dress Barn says it's going to close 53 more stores in August as part of a plan to ultimately shut down all of its women's clothing shops. Parent company Ascenta Retail Group announced back in May it was closing all 650 locations nationwide to focus on more profitable brands like Ann Taylor and Loft. Dress Barn has been around for more than 50 years. It has struggled against competition from fast fashion retailers, off-price chains, and the online market. Let's begin front and center this morning with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul's an SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager there. He's with us every Friday, our economic expert. Paul, good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you. Good morning from the far north. Evidently, we're not going to be able to avoid the weather either, so we're going to be steamy up in the Wisconsin area as well.
So the heat is in the deep woods as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the heat seems to be on Wall Street as well. So we got a little bit yesterday, and you highlighted in the montage, and this one coming from John Williams, who's the New York Fed governor, and his one-line comment that I think got everybody excited was, it's better to take preventive measures than to wait for disaster to unfold. And Wall Street took that as meaning the likelihood of a 50 basis point cut in 2 weeks is much more likely than it has been at really any time over the last few weeks or so. And now Wall Street's putting about a 45% chance of a 50 basis point cut at the end of the month.
Late yesterday, the New York Fed put out a statement saying that Williams' comments were academic, in their words. Trying to pull back on this a little bit, and I'm wondering if maybe he let the bag out of the let the cat out of the bag a little early, or do you think it was really academic, or are they trying to just backpedal a little bit?
I think they're trying to backpedal a little bit. I think, you know, certainly the expectation is for 25 basis points, and we started looking at a lot of the economic data. A lot of it is very mixed. We got a Philly Fed yesterday that was very strong. We've got retail sales that were good. But then you look at industrial production, and it wasn't all that great. And you look at a couple of the other indicators, they weren't all that strong either. Leading economic index came down this last week. So a very mixed bag on the economic front. But again, as we've talked about in the past, with unemployment below 4% and inflation running at about 1.5% to 2%, it's very unusual, and the Fed has never cut interest rates in that environment. So I think even a 25 basis point cut at this point could be seen as giving a little bit of medicine to the economy here.
Paul, talk to us a little bit about, I know we saw the Beige Book earlier this week as well. There's still some parts of the country that are struggling, look to be struggling. What was your takeaway from reading the Beige Book?
You know, it's interesting. One of the things that that gets done is taking a look at how things are described in the Beige Book. So they run the Beige Book through a computer algorithm looking for certain words, and the two that stuck the most were trade and uncertainty. So I think really when you look at it from a very high level, it is trade, really, that is at the core of why the Fed feels necessary to be cutting rates here. So it's really not looking at the domestic economy in a very focused way. It's looking at the global economy, the impact that trade and the trade tariff wars are having on both the U.S., but also very globally. And that, I think, is really the key here and part of the reason why the Fed is considering 25 basis point cuts.
Earlier this week on the issue of trade, the president in a comment said that we have a long way to go on reaching a trade agreement. That really didn't move things as much as I thought it would. Maybe Wall Street's getting used to now hearing these proclamations either way. But if you take him at his word, a long way to go is not what we want to hear.
No, you're right. And it's been something along the lines of Brexit. You know, anytime you bring that up, the markets move a little bit, certainly a lot less than they used to. And I think the markets are used to the fact, or getting used to the fact, that the trade war, trade tariffs are going to be with us for quite some time, and that we really haven't moved too terribly far after coming out of the G20, when everybody thought, oh, good, we've got some progress here and we're going to have some negotiations. There has been nothing that has happened since then. And you've heard some negative rhetoric, some positive. And I think the markets are going to be more from Missouri on this one, start to show me before they really start to react one way or the other.
Yeah, and as an investor, it's really hard to understand or hard to think who is telling the truth on some of these comments. We had after the G20, the White House saying China was going to buy more agricultural goods, for example. And then a couple of weeks later, China said, no, we did not say that. Trump's complaining this week that they're not doing that. So it's really hard to understand what, if anything, was agreed to at the G20.
It's true. And like I said, when you take the two comments in, or you take a look at their press release, if you will, you take a look at what China said and what the United States said, and you lay them next to each other, there are some big differences. And this is something that has been occurring in the past meetings, pretty different. And I think both of them are talking to their own countries. Xi is looking at the very long game here and wanting to make a deal for China where they don't lose face. In the United States, the same way. And I think that's part of the reason why the negotiations, whatever negotiations are going on, are going to be very, very long and drawn out, and we're, I think, still in the very early innings of a trade dispute with China.
Paul, earnings season kicking off. We're seeing a few of them out of the gate. Bank earnings seem to be doing pretty well. What is your take so far, and what do you expect to see in the coming weeks?
Yeah, on the bank side, it really kind of depended on how much they have in trading revenue. So the larger banks have a lot more trading and a lot more investment banking than the smaller regional banks, and they fared a little bit better. So the flatter yield curve, the difference between short-term and long-term interest rates being as narrow as it is, hurts bank earnings, and it certainly hurt a lot of the mid-tier banks. Again, not a big surprise there. Some of the banks reacted a little bit positively, but on the whole, it's pretty muted. Looking outside the banking area, it's really kind of a mixed bag. We got some very bad news from CSX, blaming a lot of the trade issues on their earnings, but Honeywell did very well. And in the technology sector, Netflix, their subscription revenue or subscribers were less than half of, or about half of what was expected. Microsoft and IBM came out with very good earnings. So far, there's really not been a common thread that you can say, here is the theme for this particular quarter's earnings. It's very much company by company, and really kind of hard to determine what companies are going to do well here going forward.
Paul, I know we've had conversations about portfolio management over the time we've known each other about whether or not you look at startups at all as investments. I thought of you yesterday when I saw this story that Adam Neumann, the co-founder and chief executive of WeWork, has reportedly cashed out more than $700 million from his company ahead of initial public offering for that company. Is that a red alert for people looking at that company?
You know, it could be. And again, the joke that I'll normally make is the answer to a lot of financial questions are it depends. And it depends here on what he's looking to do. Is he selling out? Is how much does he still own? How much influence does he have? When they go IPO, is it his shares that are being sold? So it really kind of depends on it. And with a lot of the IPO companies, a lot of the initial investors, and a lot of them are the angel investors, et cetera, that put up a lot of money for the companies in the very early stages, are the ones that are getting cashed out. Beyond that, you really still need to look at the financials. is the company making money? Are they generating cash from their operations? And I'll highlight even Netflix, even today, and Netflix has been a public company now for a long time. Their cash generation from their operations is and has been negative, which means they're burning cash and they're going to be needing to come to market on a regular basis to raise funds, either from borrowing or from issuing stock. And those are a couple of the things that we normally are going to take a look at to determine the health of a company. And you're right, for us, the IPO market is kind of fraught with a lot of danger. We'd like to see the companies be public for a couple of years before we put investor dollars into it, client money into it, to determine the health of the company and how they operate. Because operating as a public company is very different than being a private company. You have the SEC regulations. You have a lot more regulations you have to be looking at and hewing to as a public company than as a private company. So it's a very different environment once you're public.
All right, Paul. Good conversation as always. How can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
They can always drop me an email, and that's probably the best way to do it, and that's at pnulty@kingsviewam.com.
All right. Watch out for the mosquitoes up there in the woods.
We'll do, and we'll see you next week.
All right. Thank you. Paul Nulty from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul is an SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager at Kingsview.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Southwest Airlines is extending cancellations of the Boeing 737 MAX flights even further. The airline says it'll not fly the 737 MAX until at least November or perhaps longer. That follows similar announcements by American and United Airlines following the grounding of the airliner after a crash, two crashes in 5 months that killed 346 people. Joining us this morning via Skype from Los Angeles is Brian Summers, Senior Aviation Business Editor for Skift.com. Brian, I want to begin there. Is it possible that we may not see the 737 MAX flying again this year?
Steve, one thing that I've learned coming on this show almost every week is that I should probably stop predicting when this is going to happen. People in the airline industry at this point simply do not know. As we have discussed, regulators are really putting the airplane through its paces. They want to make sure that everything is absolutely perfect. I don't know when the plane will fly again. The U.S. airlines have canceled their MAX schedules up until about early November. It might be then, it might be later. There are a lot of people saying now into 2020. Nobody knows. A lot of people didn't think it was going to take this long in the beginning, but sometimes this is just the way it goes.
Should we read anything into the delay, whether or not from a safety standpoint or maybe a red tape standpoint?
I just think that everyone wants to make absolutely sure that this is the safest airplane it absolutely can be when it starts flying again. You know, it's very, very unlikely that anything bad will ever happen again, given the scrutiny that this airplane has been under. But you can imagine if you're a regulator in Washington, D.C. or sitting in Europe and something bad happens on your watch, it would be the worst thing ever. Nobody wants that to happen, and people are going to make absolutely sure that this is the safest airplane it can be when it flies again. And I know, Steve, that when it does fly again, I will certainly be one of the first people on it. I do cover this stuff all the time, and I tend to trust these people.
You have a really cool story about the 737 MAX. I know we've heard rumblings that perhaps Boeing might want to change the name of this. Tell us what you've what the word is out there that you've seen.
Well, it's a very interesting thing, Steve, because I talk to a lot of people in the airline industry, and everybody pretty much believes that this airplane, the MAX, was safe, that it's still safe, that it's going to be safe. And I think there's a lot of people in the airline industry now that underestimate what public sentiment is. So people like Ryanair, CEO, and even others privately come out and say, look, you know, when we sell somebody a ticket and the flight's on the MAX and it's $10 cheaper than another flight, people are going to come back to this airplane. People have short memories. They're not going to care. But I also spoke to a lot of crisis management and branding and PR people for the story that I wrote. And they said, look, you know, this is not about the airline industry. This is like a corporate crisis. And in a situation like this, you must change the name of the airplane. And in fact, what they told me was you have to change the name of the airplane, even if it's essentially functionally the same airplane. You have to go out there and you have to say, we've made so many changes to this, you know, whether that is or is not true. And so we've decided to change the name of the airplane. It's no longer called the MAX. It's called the new name. So there is this kind of difference between what people in the aviation industry think. You probably don't need to change the name. People will be back. And the difference between those folks that do crisis communication for a living, it's like, you must change the name.
Yeah, in the story you talk about where this sort of, some of where this started from, perhaps a paint job on a 737 MAX had a different numbering on it.
Yeah, this became viral over the weekend, at least in my aviation circles. Ryanair has these 737 MAX planes. Of course, they're not flying right now, but on the nose of the airplane, they had painted 737 MAX. And somebody caught a photograph of a new plane coming out of the factory. And this one didn't say 737 MAX on the nose. It said 737-8-200. And I will tell you, Steve, that technically that's also the name of the airplane, right? These things have various names, but people pounced on that and said, oh, they're going to call the airplane the 8-200 in the future. They're going to drop the MAX name. They may very well do that, but Ryanair's CEO came out this week and said, we have no idea where this picture came from. Don't read too much into it.
There's another story about United Airlines. I know we've been talking about all kinds of ways the airlines get revenue, make money. What is going on at United Airlines?
Yeah, historically, or at least in the last 10 years after the merger with Continental, United has had a bit of a revenue problem compared to its competitors. But people know that new management came in a few years ago. They've wanted to change that. And United has had a new mentality in Chicago that they're going to chase new revenue wherever it is. And, you know, this is probably the case with any business, but if you really go hard for new revenue, you might complicate your business, right? And airlines generally try to be simplistic so that they fly only a few types of airplanes and they have only a few seating configurations and they just try to make it simple. United has come out and said, you know what, we're not going to keep it simple. So we have these special airplanes that we're flying from Chicago to London with a lot more business class seats than usual. London is a great premium market. There's all these corporate lawyers and business people in Chicago that need to go to London that are willing to pay a fortune. The problem with that sort of thing potentially is that now you have some airplanes with a lot of business class seats and some airplanes with not so many business class seats, and you can only send some to some cities and some to other cities, and it just makes it tougher to run the airline. But United says that it can do that. And then pretty soon, Steve, this excites people like me. United's going to come out with a new regional jet that usually has 70 seats on it. United's only going to put 50 seats on it. So there's going to be 10 seats in first class. There's going to be 20 seats in economy plus, and there's going to be 20 seats in regular economy. And United just thinks that this is like the greatest idea that they've ever had. They're going to send the airplane from Chicago into small cities where people generally haven't had first class, and they're super excited about it. Will it work? I'm not sure that it will. Nobody knows. But United says its new mentality is they're going to try new things. If they work, they're going to keep them. And if not, they're going to fail fast.
There's another interesting story, Brian. You know, this tight jobs market, companies are just trying everything they can to find the best employees. And there's an interesting story about how there may be some recruiting going on for people who may be of retirement age to keep working in the aviation industry.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, as recently as about 10 years ago, if you were an airline pilot, it was very hard to get a job. There were many more qualified pilots than there were jobs. Airlines were contracting. They were getting smaller. But things changed very quickly, right? And now I'm not sure that there's a pilot shortage, but it is a great time to be a trained pilot. And so airlines are doing a few things to ensure that they can have more pilots. One thing that they're doing, Steve, is that, you know, when the labor market was pretty bad for pilots, many of them left the industry. They went on and they did something else, but they were still trained to be a pilot. So you may go on a United Express or American Eagle flight right now, and those are usually have the youngest pilots, and you might have a 55-year-old pilot who left the industry for 15 years when things weren't very good and then returned 2 years ago and said, my goodness, they're paying so much more than they used to. And it's worth going back into the industry. So that's been very interesting. Now, you talk about old pilots. People probably know that airlines are a very regulated industry. And so if you want to fly for American, Delta, United, you have to be 65 and younger. That's just the rules. But if you want to fly for a charter operation or you want to fly private jets, you can actually be quite a bit older. And so what's happening now is people are retiring from airline jobs and they're going out and getting other pilot jobs where the age 65 rule doesn't apply. So I don't know how many of our listeners are flying, private jets. But if they do, they might find a 73-year-old captain. It does happen.
All right, Brian. Great stories as always. Thank you. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Summers is Senior Aviation Business Editor for Skift.com. Make sure you follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Summers and also Skift at Skift. Brian's with us every Friday here on The Opening Bell.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a flat open, flat to positive open on Wall Street. A little bit later this morning, Dow futures are up 44 points. Time to check in on agriculture and commodities. Orion Samuelson is with us to see how the markets did yesterday and what to expect today. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning to you. It's an interesting time in the markets because we've got weather concerns, we've got trade concerns, and more than normal, and yet we're not really finding any sustained direction one way or the other. Soybean futures down yesterday, a choppy day in the trade after hitting the lowest level in more than a week. That one on forecast for cooler weather and export data that showed China had canceled soy purchases for the first time since April. USDA showed the world's top soybean importer canceled purchases of 9,800 metric tons of soy last week. And again, that goes back to the unresolved trade situation between China and the United States. Meanwhile, we've got the African swine fever involving China, too. They've now had 140 outbreaks of the disease for which there is no cure or no vaccine, and the second half of 2019, China is going to be short pork even more than they have been, and we don't realize, I think, how much pork is a part of the Chinese diet, biggest pork consumer in the world, and so we have all sorts of things to watch, but some uncertainty on what kind of a position to take, I think, in the marketplace.
Yeah, and Orion, I know producers, I saw a story yesterday, producers are really stepping up the pressure now on Congress to do something with NAFTA, too. What's going on in that area?
Well, again, the Democrat House members are saying, no, you haven't done enough yet on satisfying us for labor unions and for other concerns we have with the environment and pharmaceutical. And so I'm convinced now that nothing will happen on it before the August recess, or I like to call it the August vacation for members of Congress. And so I'm concerned that we're not going to get it done this year because of the opposition we're getting outside of agriculture. You know, the NAFTA agreement did so much for agricultural trade between the three countries, and I think farmers benefited from it, but there are those people who think, no, we just lost advantage in trade. So I'm concerned that we'll not get it done before the end of the year.
Orion, what's on the morning show tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow morning, Jim Fazell will be with us as usual. We'll be talking gardens and the heat situation. And I don't know about other parts of the Midwest, but I got 1.75 inches yesterday in my rain gauge. And so we did get some rain. But these hot temperatures, nobody knows how to deal with it with the late planting season we've had.
All right. Orion, have a great weekend and stay cool.
Well, you do the same.
All right, Orion Samuels for the morning show tomorrow morning at 5 right here on 720 WGN. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, July the 19th. Their preliminary consumer sentiment index for July is out. Analysts are forecasting some slippage from June's final figure. Consumer sentiment index is due out mid-morning. Also today, a couple of Fed speakers, including James Bullard on monetary policy where the Fed might be headed in terms of a potential rate cut coming at the meeting later this month. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, July the 19th.